shall not rise again. My fatherland, Babylon shall not rise again.
Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to Congo Vision Radio, broadcasting from the state of North Carolina in the United States. Welcome to the English edition of the Diaspora Forum of Congo Vision on this Sunday, October 12, 2008. I am your host, Sylvester Ngoma. Our program today is going to focus on the war in the Democratic Republic of Congo. As you may well know, since 1998, nearly 6 million people have died in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. That's more casualties than Iraq, Afghanistan, and Darfur combined. That's more than Rwanda. This is the deadliest conflict since the Second World War. Close to half the casualties are children younger than 5 years old. The United Nations estimates that about 500,000 people have died in Darfur since the beginning of the conflict in 2003. The New York Times reports that about 45,000 people die in the Congo each month. What a crisis. What a disaster.
Babylon, 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 Babylon.
In 1994, the international community stood by as the genocide unfolded and claimed at least 1 million lives in Rwanda in just 100 days. Since 1998, the international community has stood by as 6 million Congolese people have died, according to the International Rescue Committee. Yet, the war in the Congo is the least talked about war or human catastrophe in the world today. A young Congolese tries to change that. He is taking the lead in helping break the silence about the conflicts in the Democratic Republic of Congo. That young man is Kambale Musavuli. Along with the Friends of the Congo, they are organizing the Break the Silence Congo Week from October the 19th to October the 25th in Greensboro, North Carolina, and indeed across the United States of America. Mr. Kambale Musavuli is a Congolese activist and a member of Friends of the Congo. He is pursuing his civil engineering degree at North Carolina A&T State University. He has worked to develop programs to create positive interactions within the African American community and the African community as the president of the Association of African Students. He works with activists in Greensboro to bring about cultural understanding of his community. On his spare time, he enjoys building websites and learning and testing open source programs. He hopes to change his home country, the Congo, and bring fundamental change to end the exploitation of the Congolese people and their soil. Here is my conversation with Mr. Kambale Musavuli. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. We have the distinct privilege of being joined today by a student who's leading the effort to try to get the media to break the silence about the conflict in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Mr. Kambale Musavuli is a student at the A&T University. His mission is to try to spread the word about the conflict in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Good afternoon, Mr. Kambale.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mr. Ngoma.
Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and the campaign that you are organizing?
Yes, as you mentioned, my name is Kambale Musavuli. I'm from the Democratic Republic of Congo. I was born there in 1981. Came in the United States in 1998, right before the second invasion of Rwanda from the east of the Congo. My parents are from the east as well. I'm working right now in a campaign called Breaking the Silence, Congo Week, where we are asking students around the world to organize events to speak about the devastating situation in the Congo. And this effort was spearheaded by our friends of the Congo out of Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. From October the 19th to October the 25th, you and Friends of the Congo want to engage people in a new campaign called Break the Silence Congo Week, and that's what you just mentioned in your introduction. This week of awareness is a global initiative led by students to raise awareness about the situation in the Congo, and the mission is to provide support to the people of the Congo. What outcome are you expecting from this campaign, and what's the goal of the campaign?
The number one goal is a greater awareness. As we know, Congo is the third largest country in Africa, and it has tremendous potential. And yet, the world do not know what's happening in the Congo. And so we want to engage students around the world to actually be aware of what's happening and actually somehow provide support. Another thing is we want to elevate the profile of the Congo to the world and also lay a foundation for a global constituency for the Congo. There are people outside the Congo that want to help us, so we want them to join us in helping us fight regain the sovereignty of the Congo. We also want to establish some type of a connection, an exchange connection with the student at home, the activists at home, and the global constituencies to work for the betterment of Congo. And lastly, we also want to create a platform for the Congolese to speak about what's happening in the Congo in our own voices, rather than others to speak out for what is our conflict about.
And you're doing this in Greensboro, North Carolina. Is that correct?
Yes. I am based in Greensboro, but I've been traveling a lot lately, going to different states to let the people know what's going on. I'm joined by students from Cornell University, from Maryland, from Georgia, from California. So I'm able to coordinate that here, but it does require me to travel a bit to connect with these other students.
Millions of people have died in the Democratic Republic of Congo since the beginning of the war in 1998. Millions have been displaced. Thousands of women have been raped. Women have been buried alive, the children have been killed. Despite this human toll, there seems to be very little mention of this tragedy in the media. Lisa Jackson referred to this as the greatest silence. Why is there such a huge wall of silence in the media around the deaths of nearly 6 million people in the Congo?
It's not such a complex way to actually talk about why the media does not cover it. First, I would like to mention that the war in the Congo started in 1996, and usually they never mention the first invasion of Rwanda from 1996 to 1997, which caused at least a million or two to die during that. We also have to understand the media machine. The West has this particular interest. As a friend of mine point out, I have a young lady friend of mine from Sudan, who's a very strong activist. As I ask her, why is there such a silence around what's happening in the Congo? And her comment was, do you know how many people are involved in the Congo? Just not to give a quick background, just for the time being, the Secretary of Energy of George W. Bush, Samuel Bachman, has a company called Cabot Corporation out of Massachusetts that exploits the cotton from the Congo. And it was listed as one of the companies illegally exploiting the Congo. So that just shows you the level of connection to one cooperation to the Congo, another one is Freeport. Also, there is a Dan Ryder report that just came out last month, if I'm not mistaken, showing how Freeport is exploding. So from the mineral wealth of the Congo, the vast mineral wealth that we have, World Corporation make it a mission to make sure that it does not hit the media. And we also have to remind people that this crisis happened because of the two invasions from Rwanda, Uganda in 96 and 98, and now from the news that's coming out of the Congo from just a few days back, I think Wednesday or Thursday, there is another invasion about to happen again in the east of the Congo.
And what is amazing is that nearly 6 million people have died in the Congo. That's more casualties than Iraq, Afghanistan, and Darfur combined. This is the deadliest conflict ever since the Second World War. And people don't seem to talk about that. Why do you think this human catastrophe has not yet caught the world's attention the way similar disasters in other parts of the world usually have?
I think it has something to do also with world convenience. Everyone is connected, like I mentioned again. If you have to look at the modern technology and how Congo is essential to modern technology with the use of Caltech, it would be people do not really know what's happening, and mainly the media, as I mentioned, will not cover that. The numbers seems to put people in some sort of amnesia where they can't connect. I always say that every 5 months, Darfur happens in the Congo, since the numbers are anywhere from 250,000 to 500,000 people who have died in Darfur. And yet we have 6 million people who have died. But it also comes up to citizens' journalism. We as Congolese should be also be the advocate for the Congo. We've not been as good as we could, or we have not been given a platform to be able to speak out about the devastating situation. Just sharing with other people in my circle is that it's hard to go to your oppressor and tell them why you're oppressing me. It's better for you to organize and come together as one to solve your issues. Then that way, the oppressor may not come and oppress you. So it's a double-sword issue, really, when it comes to what's happening in the Congo.
Mm-hmm. And you're doing a lot. In September, you attended a press conference in Washington to bring attention to the Congo conflicts. And there you met with Danny Glover, the actor Danny Glover, and you also met with Reverend Al Sharpton. This is really commendable. How are you and the Friends of the Congo planning to help break this silence?
We are trying to, like I mentioned, to build a constituency. The world do not know. We know that there are people out there in the world that do care about world issues, especially about the Congo. By making sure to go where the media is, like in July, I went to the Unity Conference in Chicago, where I was able to meet Roland Martin, Soledad O'Brien, Byron Pitt from CBS, and so on and so forth. As I met them, I told them the same thing, you know, pressing the issues, you know, doing the citizen journalism to go out there in front of them and say, why aren't you covering the worst conflict since World War II? What can you do to help me? You know, put that in your newspaper. Make sure you talk to people. So I think in September when I met Danny Glover, you know, there was Jackie Ray, she was there, Ed Gordon as well was there. I spoke to him about what's happening in the Congo. And as you continue to pressure, I can honestly tell you that the question that was asked in the debate was because of the effort that we have done this whole summer to make sure that the media know about what's happening in the Congo. And when we watched the debate last week and we heard the gentleman from NBC ask Barack and McCain how would they use their power as president to solve conflict such as what's happening in the Congo. So as we continue to press, as Friends of the Congo giving me a platform to be able to be advocate for the Congolese and pressing the issues of the Congo out there to the media, out there to the politicians here in America, then it will help break the silence. The word will get out slowly.
And let me just say that the Unity Conference is an annual conference for Asian, Black, Latino, and American Indian journalists in the United States. And my next question to you is that you've done some grassroots efforts to try to get the word out, and you've tried to make a connection between cell phone use and the war in the Congo. You've even organized a cell phone boycott in March of 2008. Are you getting any positive results or feedback? Is the word getting out?
Yes, certainly. Certainly the word is getting out. The cell phone boycott is actually what has brought us to what we call now Congo Week. As we organized the cell phone boycott in March of this year, the idea was to try to connect the people with something that they know, something they can understand. As you, people may know, is that coltan in the Congo, a mineral found in many electronics, such as cell phones, laptops, DVD players, VCR, pacemakers, I mean, microwaves as well. Coltan is probably 10% of the mineral being exploited in the Congo. You have gold being exploited, you have diamonds being exploited, now you have petroleum oil around the Kivu, Lake Kivu. They are being exploited as we speak, but that don't ring a bell. When I tell someone that the diamond that you have may come from the Congo, that will not ring a bell. But when we see how modern technology have used the coltan, use it in the cell phones, in PDAs, in all these electronics, and understanding that 80% of the world reserve of coltan is in the Congo, that hits home. That connect the people directly with what's happening in the Congo. When I tell them that the phone that you have has blood on it, they sense some type of connection directly to what's happening in the Congo, and they feel compelled to help break the silence around the war in the Congo. And as we continue to make those connections, the word is getting out. Truly, I can tell you at least 40% of the students on my campus know about the Congo and know about the coltan connection to their cell phones. And that's already for me a great accomplishment, to make sure that the people in the West understand that modern technology is causing devastation in Africa.
And you mentioned this before, and I did watch the presidential debate where the Congo issue came up. Unfortunately, neither candidate addressed it in their responses. Do you have a sense that the American people are aware of the extent of the destruction of the human lives that is taking place in DRC?
I mean, I can guarantee you that the American politicians do know. Speaking for Barack Obama, he has written a bill in 2006 which gave the Congo about $400 million to promote democracy there. And that money from the GAO report is still here. At least 10% of that money has been used toward NGOs back in the Congo. For McCain as well, Cindy McCain is a friend of Kagame. She's been back to Rwanda many times, so she understands the problem of the Great Lakes very well, and definitely her husband will know. So I know the presidential candidates do know. The politicians do know. I will speak now for my congressman here, Bradley Miller. He is the representative of in North Carolina in the 13th district. He's been to the Congo twice in the past 5 years. He knows what's happening, and I've met him also in the summer. And he understands what's happening. He understands there is a sense of urgency to solve the issue. But what I come to find out when it comes to the politicians is their constituents here do not know what's happening. And they have not found a way to express, to have the savior talk, basically how will you come out after 6 million people dying and say, let's go ahead and stop this, and not sounding like you are a part of the problem? So that's the language that they are really thinking about. How are we going to address this issue, knowing that this is the world's issue out there as we speak, and yet do not come out as one of the forces that instigated the war. But from it all, I just say the more they wait, the more people continue to die, and the sense of urgency for the Congolese people around the world to rally and help the Congo directly. Because I believe for Congo to regain its sovereignty, it will only take Congolese to go ahead and make sure that the country is liberated from all the forces against the Congo.
And we do know that foreign troops are involved in the conflict in the Congo. And despite the fact that there is ample evidence of the involvement of foreign troops in this war, why do you think the United Nations have not taken bolder actions to impose peace in the east of the Congo?
The answer is right there, Rwanda. Rwanda is the problem. With the genocide in Rwanda, the world has had a sense of guilt of what happened, as it was portrayed that the world watched what happened. And as some of the people that watched what happened during that time would tell you that all troopers were around Rwanda. So what Rwanda has done is that they have gotten the world, the international community, to rally behind their suffering and give them a sense of leeway to be able to do whatever they need to do. I mean, Rwanda exploit sell the coltan in the world, and they have no coltan in Rwanda, so it's very clear that they exploited the Congo. But since they have put that guilt into the world of what happened there, then they feel ashamed to do anything about anything they will do. You know, you have people like Bill Gates that support Kagame, Bill Clinton that supports Kagame, the Reverend from California, I can't grasp his name on top of my head, the guy that wrote the book The Purpose Driven Life. He's also a friend of Kagame, and as they continue to support him and not telling him that what he's doing in the East is detrimental for peace in the Congo, Rwanda will continue to exploit the Congo.
And 800,000 people died supposedly in Rwanda in 1994, yet more than 6 million have perished already in the Congo. It's just amazing that the world wouldn't talk about this. It's thought by many that the war in the DRC has been allowed to go on by the international community despite the human toll. Do you think this is due to racism, cynicism, or economic interests?
Definitely all three. Let's speak about, for example, the economic interest. What is really fascinated me, as I am in the West, to be able to have access to different information of the financial state of different companies. Companies like ON Group, Cabot Corporation, that I mentioned earlier, people like George Forrest, Dan Jettler, Benny Steimers, Anglo, and De Beers, which they continue to play a financial role in the Congo to make sure that there will always be a great silence around what's happening in the Congo. So as no all plays, but the main factor is economic interest. There are so much money being made a day because of the chaos. And that's why I always concentrate on that, because I understand this is the root cause of the conflict. As I was speaking a few days back with family members, is that when we have to look back about how we lived in some form of harmony with Rwanda in the 80s, in the 70s, not so much of a harmony, but we were not at war with Rwanda, that now we have this destruction while we are fighting each other, we still see trucks leaving the Congo with minerals that just tell you that there is a bigger problem at stake than us fighting each other. But I understand that for that peace to be created, to be sustainable, Rwanda somehow has to be removed. Rwanda, you're going to have to be removed from the Congo. And I don't think after 12 years of Congolese still crying about what's happening in the Congo, it will be able to be solved from the East. The Congolese themselves have to come together and be able to say, enough is enough. 12 years, 6,250,000 registered rape victims, 1.6 million people internally displaced, and just last week, from Wednesday till Thursday, we have 100,000 people that fled the Goma area because they were running away from the Rumungabo area. I mean, this is our country. And the only way I can see things change from what's happening is for the Congolese to be united and say enough is enough and solve the conflict, solve the problem ourselves, because the world will not do it for us. The world will help us in solving the issue, but they will not be the ones starting it because they haven't.
So what do you see as the biggest challenge to peace in DRC? Is it just Rwanda, or do you think something needs to be done also by the government as far as management or managing the country?
I would love to go even a little lower than that. I think civic education is the main issue. I was born in the Congo, raised in the Congo, and yet I didn't know the history of my country and the potential of my country until I came to the United States and reading everything that I have access to here. Civic education, for us to understand our culture first, that's what will create anything else with management. I know just with my five fingers, I know at least five professors, Congolese professors, who are well educated that can solve the issues there. We have so many Congolese intellectuals that can take care of the management of the country, that can take care of the rebuilding of the country, that they have the know-how of building. But the basis of rebuilding is not there. The youth is deteriorated. Just put this like in a perspective. While there is a war, the children are not going to school. The children are not being educated. They are the leaders of tomorrow. And some of the youth that have been lucky, they are in the West. No, I am here in the United States. Some of my friends are in Europe. Some are in Northern Africa. And all the brain, there is this large brain drain that has happened to the Congo, and the country is deteriorating because the education system is not there. That basic civic education is not there. When it's implemented, everything else can be fixed. No, I don't have to talk a lot about Kanambe as president, but he can be taken care of. But what is at stake? What is at stake right now, at the present moment, is the removal of Rwandan forces, the Ugandan forces, away from the Congo, so that we can have a sustainable peace. Then, rebuilding the education system, we can get the infrastructure, we have the resources to do so. We have the minerals, we have the human capacity to do so. We have the most intellectual and intelligent professors around the world. Some teachers here at UNC Chapel Hill, some teachers in colleges in Europe, in Louvain, and other universities around the world. So we can solve it as Congolese by removing that Eastern intrusion and rebuilding the education system and then the infrastructure, all in accord will help to have the Congo that Lumumba always dreamed of, you know, just reading his old speech, his Independence Day speech, and the last letter that he wrote to his wife, he had a dream of a peaceful Congo, of a prosperous Congo, which will be the jewel of Africa, and that can be achieved. And we, as Congolese, are the answers to that. What do we really want to give up? Do we want to give up our time to achieve that dream? Do we want to give us our own personal comfort to achieve that dream? What are we going to do right now as our country is in crossroads to make sure that the generation to come have what we have, I have what I had, the love that I know just growing up now, there, have that peace, have that prosperity, has that I can do everything that I can as long as I go to school, you know.
Okay, how can one join you next week?
For the Break the Silence?
Yes.
Yes. Break the Silence is happening from October the 19th to the 25th. And what we are asking people to do, the one action item, is on that Wednesday, October the 22nd, we are calling for our second cell phone boycott. We call it the sellout, where we are asking people to turn the cell phone off for 6 hours, from 12 p.m. to 6 p.m., and make sure that these people also are changing their voicemail, explaining why their phone is off. So if someone calls, they'll be able to hear, hey, my name is Kambale, my phone is off today in solidarity with the Congolese people for the 6 million people who have died because of the exploitation of cult. And something brief to explain why your phone is off that day. Other ways you can get involved, visit the website. You'll be able to see different events in your community. When you go to congoweek.org and you click on the English site, there will be an events map giving you an idea of where the events are taking place in your community. Or yourself, you could organize an event, a film screening, you could organize a prayer, you could call your local radio stations, your local papers to cover the Congo. You could talk to people at your job. I was telling a friend of mine to take all the employees at his job to a bowling night, you know, go bowl for the Congo, and whatever money you raise there, raise it for an NGO in the Congo. Anything you can do to provide support for the Congolese people during that week is critical. That's really what we're calling for. Whatever you can do, do it for the Congo. If you're a poet, write a poem about the Congo. If you're a singer, sing about the Congo. If you pen, pen a drawing for the Congo.
If you're a teacher, teach a lesson on the Congo.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
This is interesting. Do you have any final comments before we close our program?
Yes. My call is really, I have a call for the diaspora. 12 years has been a very long time coming, and the people at home really need our help. Whatever we can do to help our people, Congo is our home. Congo will always be our home. Let's do whatever we can, wherever we are, to raise awareness about what's happening in the Congo and to actually provide support to the Congolese people. It's very saddening just hearing different things that's happening, even in Kinshasa. You know, I have friends that have been arrested in Makala because they spoke out, and nobody knows that's happening there. We have to provide support for the people on the ground so they know that we have not forgotten them, and make sure we go home. We have to go home to change our country. Nobody will do it but us.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kambale Musavuli, for joining us. You are an exceptional human being. Continue to do what you are doing, and we do hope that the world will finally wake up and take bold actions to stop the war in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. For those of you who are listening, to find out more about the Congo Week, visit the website www.congoweek.org or www.friendsofthecongo.org. And again, thank you very much, Mr. Kambale.
Thank you for having me.
We want peace in the Congo, peace no more. We want peace in the Congo, peace no more. Come back.
Babylon shall not rise again. Babylon shall not rise again.